Good morning. We should be closing out Psalms 15 today. It's been just a joy of and a challenge to go through it. But before we get to Psalms 15, one verse from Psalms 16. It's just so wonderful. It's actually speaking about you. David wrote this, and he says in Psalms 16, verse 3, he says, "As for the saints who are in the earth, they are the majestic ones, and whom is all my delight." So God's people are called saints. We're set apart. That's what saints mean. And they're also calling us, the Holy Spirit is calling us majestic. And I'm assuming that sometimes, like me, you look at yourself, me, majestic. But if you're a child of God, He considers you, God considers you majestic. Isn't that awesome? So it's great to have delight in you, God's majestic ones. We are now in Psalms 15. Get to the right place. Up. Thank goodness that's only the first time you've ever had to remind me of that, right? You know, if I had a big thing flashing on the screen, Mike, you need your mic.
We're doing good.
I think you're right. I think you're right. So here we go. I'm getting used to this, Bill. This finger zapper. Doesn't mean I'm good at it, but getting used to it. So the question that we all have memorized by now, we're looking at the two parallelism that David asks. Really, the question is this: who can live with God? And regardless of the religion a person is in, I would say that anybody on earth that believes in a creator, whether they know the true creator or not, asks that question: can I someday live with God? What does it take? Who gets to live with God? That's the question that we've been asking for the last 2 weeks before this and closing today. Who can live with God? And here's what we've read three times now, one each week. And if you read about it, you'll see three things that are the core. These three attitudes, these three mental values. The answer is, who can live with God? He who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. And then, as we talked about it earlier, we're going to see several examples of what that means. A person doesn't slander, they don't do evil to their neighbor, they don't take up a reproach against their friend, and they don't charge too much interest. But if you've looked at this a little bit, have you noticed that there are some important instructions that are missing? Maybe missing is the wrong word, but criteria that God says are essential for Christians to have that aren't even up there. For instance, it doesn't say anything about peacemakers. But in Hebrews 12, 14, it says, pursue peace. You go after, pursue peace with all men, and the sanctification, the being set apart, because we're saint, pursue peace with all men, without which no one will see God. Ooh, that's pretty big, right? Nothing about peacemakers up here. Nothing about sexual purity up here. I don't see anything that has to do directly with parenting or being a good husband or wife. And on we could go. Many, many things we don't see when God tells us who can live with Him. And that's because this is a song, only five verses in it. Holy Spirit inspired David to write it. It's a song. And it was intended to convey an idea, a feeling. It was intended to be sung from the heart and to motivate the heart, like today. A segue for just a minute, or whatever they call it, a rabbit trail. When you sing, like today, like last week, it affects a lot of people. I don't know if you know that, but it affects visitors. It affects each other. There's just a vibe. There's an energy. It comes across as a zeal and a love for God. It also affects the preacher. I don't care who he is. You know, if the singing is like this, you know, that affects us. And if it's like it has been, even if you don't hit the notes, as I've said before, it affects us. So there are several things in here. Well, this is a song, only five verses. It's not going to cover the base. It's not a doctrinal chapter of the Bible. But it's meant to move the heart, to inspire us, to motivate us. I want to be like that. I want to swear to my own hurt and not change. I want to be that kind of a person. I want to walk with integrity. And it's meant to move us. And as we said 2 weeks ago, these first three things, walk in integrity, work in righteousness, and speaking the truth in our heart, those three things affect and direct every single other command in the Bible. Some of them overlap. But I can't think of a single command, a single requirement for God's people that aren't contained in those three right there. So Psalm 15 is a snapshot. It's a snapshot of to convey an idea. And if we continue on with this idea of snapshot, remember Scott Souza's excellent sermon, a Kodak moment or whatever he called it, was awesome. Picture, no pun intended, but it's there. Picture a collage of millions of photographs. Imagine that a picture would be taken of you every single hour, every single day of your life. Just a picture, snap, snap, you know, 8 in the morning, 9, 10, 11, 12 at night, 2 at night, sometimes you're snoring, sometimes you're awake, doing homework, whatever it is. But imagine your life being represented by thousands or millions of photographs. They're not going to capture everything, but the person of God, that the majestic ones, the saints, the holy ones, they live in a consistent way, not a perfect way. Not a perfect way. Remember Cornelius, a righteous man who still needed Jesus and he still needed forgiveness. But we live in a consistent way. So imagine we have all these pictures and we just randomly throw a dart and the one we hit, we look at. And they're all of Christians. So we'll do that right now. So here's a song leader and it's Andrew. Andrew's leading singing. And you can tell, I don't know a thing about Photoshop. I don't. So you're going to have to live with this. And he's not the only one up here. But Andrew, they snapped a picture of him at whatever time it was on a Sunday morning, 10 o'clock. He's not sleeping in, watching a Seahawks game. He's not out in his garden. He's not at the local pub. He's here with the majestic ones. Voluntarily desiring to lead us in song. And then we look at another one. Oh, look at that. It's John and Samuel. And you know what they're doing? They visited Mike Brenneman's home, my home. I was new here. And they made me feel welcome. And we had great talks. And some of them were very spiritual. And we just got to know each other and played ping pong. And that's a righteous thing. They made me feel like part of the family. That's not in Psalms 15, but it's righteousness. And then we have Sue. I couldn't get that picture right, but Sue Cook. And so someone is invalid for a couple of weeks. So she's over there, bless her heart, like she does so often, and she's helping out. She's cleaning. And she doesn't have to be there. It's all voluntary. And then we have Jenny. And so the one who brings these packages of love, right? And she brings people dinner when they can't cook for themselves. And so she just has these groceries right there. And we have Robert Quinn who blesses us by leading a prayer voluntarily again. No one has to lead prayer here. Sometimes it's scary. But these are all from the heart. And these are snapshots in time because even though none of these five things we looked at are contained, directly spoken about in Psalm 15. They're consistent with being righteous, walking with integrity, and speaking the truth in the heart. And on that issue, speaking truth in the heart, because we're consistent, we're not perfect, but we live consistently. Imagine this. Imagine that you're a witness in court and they want your testimony. What's the opposing lawyer going to do? What is his job when witnesses come up there? He wants to destroy the reputation. His job is to discredit the witnesses so that the jury says, I'm not going to listen to that guy. All of his friends say he's a liar. His boss says he's a liar. He got fired three times. But when the majestic ones, when we're witnesses because we speak the truth in the heart, that's what Jesus says comes out of the mouth. And they won't be able to destroy our credibility or our character because we live consistently even beyond the few things that are contained in Psalms 15. So today, the last two verses of Psalms 15, they're just so packed, so wonderful. I'm not going to read them again. We'll get to them as we go, but that's what we're going to be covering today. So last week, we covered this pretty thoroughly. It's the first line of verse 4, and it says, in whose eyes, talking about one who will dwell with God, in whose eyes a reprobate is despised. Now, there's some tricky language in this book, and as I told you before, the reprobate is only used once in all the New American Standard, both Old and New Testament, just once. And some translators don't agree, but man, the context just makes it so clear. I even saw more. So, let me say this, that why? Why despise the reprobate? We looked at this one proverb last week, but why? A righteous man hates falsehood because it's contrary to his values. A righteous woman or man values the truth, and that's what they speak inside of their spirit. But a wicked man acts disgustingly and shamefully. Simple language. If we're a majestic one, striving to live for Jesus, and we watch a person who does all kinds of things contrary to the values of God, it's disgusting. We don't want to be around that. We go, the language and the way they treat people, and he's so mean-spirited, or she is, and it's disgusting. But I want to say this, that well, I'll give you the examples first of behavior. Examples of the behavior of a reprobate. It's right here in Psalm 15. It's right there. So take verse 3. The righteous man doesn't slander with his tongue. A reprobate does. They slander people. A reprobate, in the next line, does evil to his neighbor. Not good. That's why he's a reprobate. He's against God's values. He does take up a reproach against his friend because he's against God. It says in the end of verse 4, he swears to his own hurt. A reprobate lies all the time. They make a promise and they break their word. That's why they're called that. They're in rebellion against God. And you can go down. They in verse 5, man, when they loan money to somebody, and there may be exceptions. When they loan money, man, they charge so much interest. They did back then. The Jews did it. We see it in the book of Nehemiah. They just hurt people. The people just, I've got to have money for food or to pay my rent. And so they overcharge them. Anyway, these are some examples of what a reprobate is, just the opposite of one who fears God. So that I know that's pretty straightforward, but I want to give you a caution. The Lord doesn't want us to hate them. See, when I look at the word despise, sometimes it seems to be a lot like the word hate, and it can be. But if we read the Bible in context, we see that's never God's intention for us to hate someone. We're to hate what they do. We're to hate it so much we don't want to be around it because it will pollute us too. Evil companions corrupt good morals. But we're not to hate the person. Imagine taking this literally according to the English word despise and say, God's commanded me to despise reprobates. So I'm going to go to the mall today and I'm going to listen for people that are using foul language. I'm going to despise them. And the people that have really nasty things on their shirts, I'm going to despise, I'm going to hate them too. And I'm going to look especially for shoplifters. And if we spend all of our time looking for people to despise, we wouldn't finish a month in 10 years in a lifetime. That's not God's intent. It's to be repulsed by their actions because He wants us to choose the right people to spend time with. He wants us to spend time with people that fear God. So the idea is not to hate. Romans 12, 9, I'm not going to put it up there, but it says, abhor what is evil. Not who is evil, but abhor what is evil. Oh, cling to that which is good, it says, Romans 12, 9. So I think because there are so many scriptures on this, that this is the idea here. It's a song to put across, convey a message in our mind, a feeling that we should get. Proverbs 14, 21, he who despises his neighbor sins. Matthew 22, 39, Jesus, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Oh, wait, which neighbor now? The nice ones? Well, if we read the Good Samaritan, we see that it doesn't matter who it is. The Samaritan didn't know who the guy that was close to death was. From a distance, he couldn't tell what nationality he was. Didn't know if he was a mean man, nice man. It doesn't matter. The one that is our neighbor is the one we have an opportunity to influence, and Jesus has loved them. So we're moving on. I just wanted to cover that. It's not our job, and it's not intended for us to hate people who are reprobates, but to hate their deeds and to stay away from them. But sometimes, guess what? I don't know all the people that Jake works with, but I'm assuming that there may be a few people that don't love God that you have to interact with, or Samuel on a construction site. Well, you're both construction, or nurses in here, or whatever. Sometimes you're going to have to spend time with them because you work with them. Well, then there's your opportunity. There's your opportunity to be consistent, to display integrity, righteousness, truth. Speak to them about Jesus. Maybe they're not ready. Maybe they are. This is your opportunity to win them. But we don't choose those people to spend our recreational time, our free time with. Okay, so we're to honor those who fear the Lord. We mentioned it really briefly, about 30 seconds last week. Wanted to point this out. If we're to honor those who fear the Lord, honor means to show respect for, to have high esteem for. It's a mental thing, partially. But honor is always action. It may start in the mind. Honor is always much more than having respectful thoughts for someone. It includes action. 1 Timothy 5:3, honor widows who are widows indeed. Now, if you've studied 1 Timothy 5, and we did not too far long ago, Bill Downey taught on it. To honor widows, I'll ask you, don't answer out loud, but what does it mean? Support them financially. If they don't have any family, Christians first, then the church, but to honor them meant money. It meant an action because they're old, probably can't fend for themselves, and they need help. And that's what 1 Timothy 5 is talking about. And it says also in 1 Timothy 5:8, it says, he who fails to provide, the one, it doesn't say he, it says the one who fails to provide for his family is worse than a non-believer. So this whole, you'll see most of this chapter about honor, and honor is full of action. Other examples, that means financial help here. How about this one regarding widows? Pure and undefiled religion is this, in the sight of our God and Father, to visit orphans and widows. Action. Honor is always action. The elders who rule well, 1 Timothy 5:17, are to be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who work hard at preaching and teaching. What double honor? I esteem you, Bill, and I respect you. And Andrew, I respect you and esteem you. And no, no. One type of honor would be, since there are elders, we're told to obey our rulers in Hebrews chapter 13. So part of honoring is to submit to their leadership. But his second part, it means pay. If you read the context of 1 Timothy 5:17 and on, it said the worker's worthy of his wages. So two ways we can honor elders, and there are more, but one is to obey them. Two, pay them. Honor is always action. So when it says that the godly man, godly woman, honors those who fear the Lord, it's not just I sure think a lot of Teresa. She's a great lady. It's more than that. Spending time together, seeking them out. Is there some way I can help? But it's an action word. Acts 2:46, here's more action. Day by day, this is right after the church began, continuing one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house. They were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart. The Christians, and look, I know that that's pretty tough for us to do every day. Would you feed me if I came over every day, Michael? No. Many of these people were from out of town. They were there for the Pentecost, Passover and Pentecost. But even so, it wasn't just them. It seemed like the saints were very involved. That's honor. That's action. They wanted to be with one another, with those that feared the Lord. Just another example of honor. So I mentioned this already in the intro, but Psalms were songs and poems. They were messages intended to move our hearts, to give us, convey an idea. I want to be a man of integrity, righteousness, and truth. And so it's to motivate us in that way, to look at our own lives. The attitude of honoring those who fear the Lord, wanting to be with them, spending time together, and showing acts of kindness, that's what God would like us to do. Not at the expense of your family, not at the expense of your job, but there's this desire there because we're to honor those who fear God. 4C is an impressive verse. It says, this is back to the people who will get to abide with God. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. So if you're not familiar with this psalm, this kind of swearing is not cussing. This person isn't swearing, cussing until it hurts. This is the kind of swearing we used to do in the courts in America. I haven't been in a long time, so I don't know if they still do it. But they would ask every witness or every person giving testimony, do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? You swear. That's the idea here. It's making a promise, making an oath. That's that kind of... That's what the word swear here means. Jesus simplified it, though. He says in Matthew 5:34, but I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God. But let, and I'm skipping down a couple of verses, don't make an oath at all, but let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond these is evil. So think about this. I've made some promises, and you know, signing a contract is a promise, but verbal promises, right? I've said, look, I gave you my word, but I don't do it very often, because if your word is good, if you always keep your word, why do we need to make a promise? But if we're word keepers, then making a promise doesn't strengthen at all, because we do what we say we're going to do. Now, some people may need to hear you say that. Maybe they're not one who fears God, or it's a child, but the idea is this. He swears to his own hurt, whether he says, I promise, or he just says, I'll be there on Tuesday. But this man or woman who swears to their own hurt, what that means is this. You make a commitment, no. It's going to cost me. For instance, you have a friend, many of us do, that owns a condo in Hawaii. So you say, I say, Samuel, I'll be there August 17th. I'll be there and help you rototill, or at least watch you rototill, but I'll be there. And then my friend says, hey, I can't get to my condo in Hawaii. It's yours for free. You just have to pay the plane, flight, and food. You want it? When is it? Well, it's the 15th through the 20th. Yeah, I want it. Yeah, I love Hawaii. So what do I do? Well, I'll tell you what I would do, and this is where judgment is called for. I would call, Samuel, I gave you my word. I said I'd be there on the 17th, and I keep my word. I'm wondering if you would allow me to come early. Could I show up on the 14th and do that same work? No. Okay. Could I pay a gardener for if I was going to come for hours, could I pay a gardener for 8 hours? Would you allow me to pay a gardener? Because I have a chance to go to Hawaii. Mike, I don't trust him. I know who your gardener is, and he steals things. Look, if he doesn't give me permission to change it, I'm going to be there on the 17th. That's going to hurt. Going to hurt. And so you've had lesser significant ones than that all your life because we get conflicts of interest. Sometimes, make this clear, God expects us to keep our word. Just because you get free tickets to the Hawks doesn't mean it's okay to break our word. And that hurts. I love watching football. So he expects us to keep it even if it's inconvenient, even if it costs us something, even if it hurts. There are times, and the Lord knows this, when you will not be able to keep your word. Yeah, Mike, I'll be there for your anniversary. I'll be there. You know, and it's on the 22nd. And I get COVID on the 20th. I got to keep my word, Mike. I'm coming over. You know, no, there are exceptions. Or you get in a car accident. God knows that. There are exceptions. But the man or woman who speaks truth in the heart and who wants to dwell with God, they're going to do everything they can to keep their word. So that's what this is saying. And once we give it, we don't change. So Jesus simplified what promises are. He just says, keep your word. Say yes, say no. That's it. Does not change. I talked about that already, even if it costs you something. And it will, and it has. You've been there. 5a, he does not put out his money at interest. What this means is this. If you read, in fact, I think I have an Old Testament, Leviticus 25, 36. Do not take usurious interest from him. Talking about poor person, if you read the context. So someone's poor. Can you loan me some money? Do not take usurious interest from him. That means, yes, I can loan you money. I can loan you money. I'll loan you, how much do you need, 500? No problem. It's yours for 2 weeks. Now, when 2 weeks is up, you owe me 750. Sign right here. Oh, and by the way, read the small print, because if you don't pay me back, your car is mine. That's usurious interest. That's it used to be against the law in the United States. But check out some of the credit cards. Once Lisa got sick and our doctor bills went up, even though we paid them on time, or at least some of them on time, it went from 12 and 14%. Our interest rates on our credit cards, because they saw that we were using our cards a lot, they had the right to, our credit card rate went, depending on the card, 29 to 32%. I mean, if you know your math, some people don't like math, but you know, if you owe $10,000 and you're paying 32% interest, that's usury, what they call usury. So The Jews were told, don't do that, but revere God that your countrymen may live with you. You shall not give him your silver, your money, at interest, nor your food for gain. What it means, food for gain, is, you know, here's 3 apples, but I want 6 back. You're gaining. Now, the righteous man or woman, their intent is to do good. They want to do good. They want to help someone out, and that's what they hope to do. But the reprobate, their intent is not to do good. Their intent is greed and selfishness. They want to get as much out of it as they can. So sure, I'll loan you. Like I said, you don't pay me back in 2 weeks. Your car is mine. Sign here. That's usury, and the Bible says don't do that. And the godly person, the majestic ones, value people more than money. I'm going to go back just a second if I can. I want to say one more thing. Do you think we have the right to invest money or loan money for business purposes and make a profit? Because we do. That's not what this is talking about. This is talking about don't hurt people who can't. Don't hurt your brethren. You just treat them. You go beyond the call. And if they don't pay you back, Jesus says, then forget it. But we know we can make interest. It's not a sin to make interest if it's a business venture. Because Matthew 25, remember the 3 stewards, one given 5 talents, one given 2, one given 1 talent. And the one that failed the master was the one that buried the 1 talent, the smallest amount of money. And he said, if you knew I was that way, you know, harsh and exacting and demanding, why didn't you put it in the bank and at least make some interest on my money? Jesus told the parable. So you can make interest. So if you have IRAs, don't liquidate them right now. It's just that when we're loaning to a holy one, we're to do it with kindness. If we can afford to do that, we're to do it with kindness and for their good, not ours. So I'm going the wrong way now. Nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. Notice it has to do with money again. So to take a bribe means to lie, either hide the truth or make up something that will hurt someone in court or in some kind of judgment matter, but it's to be deceiving and to lie and to get paid to do it. But remember, we are people that speak truth in the heart. And so we don't do that. Besides, it injures the other person. So both of these issues are money issues. So because these are snapshots, imagine looking at a person's life who fits the good criteria. What else you know about how they use their money? Well, you know that they use it well because they're truthful, they're righteous, they have integrity. So if they're Christians, they're going to give properly. New Testament doesn't tell us how much to give. Just as give as you've been prospered. So that person that had the right attitude and doesn't do these 2 evil things we just read about, you can know that they're going to honor God because they realize everything they have is a gift from God. They're going to give it back to Him. They're going to use their money in a way that blesses people, pleases God, and that they're allowed to enjoy. If you read the book of Ecclesiastes, it's okay. It's okay to go to the movies. It's okay to go to Hawaii, even if you don't get a free condo. Enjoy it, but use it well in a way that honors God. Deuteronomy 16:19, you shall not distort justice. You shall not be partial. That means biased. You shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eye of the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. I mentioned that business transactions are okay. I mentioned Jesus said in the parable, you should have put my money in the bank. But crushing someone with too much interest, and look, I would be shocked. I'd bet money on it, except they don't bet. I know that doesn't happen here. But there's a temptation among people, and maybe someday you'll be tempted to charge too much interest. So Travis borrows some money from me, and I say, I'm so sorry, Travis. You're a day late on your payment. Your car is now mine. That's despicable in the sight of God. That's what a reprobate does, but not a holy one. We say, hey, when can you get it back to me? My house payment's coming up too. When can you get it back to me? Not to crush someone. He does not put out his money in interest, nor does he take a bribe. Both are money issues, as I said. Money is not their highest priority. Money is not their driver. Money is not our God. Is it okay then for a Christian to be motivated by money? What do you think? So if I get two job offers, and one says, hey, I'd like you to drive for me, $18 an hour. Thank you for the offer, but I can't pay my bills in $18 an hour. Another one says, hey, we'd like you to drive a semi for us, pay you $42 an hour. I'm motivated to take the better one, and a wise person should. Now, it's saying that money isn't important, because it is. The Bible has like 700 verses in the Bible on finances. It's very important. It's just that it needs to be put in its place, not above God, but well below Him, to serve Him. What to do when this person sees a Christian widow in need? What kind of contributor is he at church? Pleases God, uses the money, and we serve God properly. Blesses people, supports the congregation, enjoys the fruit of his labor. So here's the last verse. We're going to make it. It says, he who does these things will never be shaken. Now that does these things is the good things, not the bad things. He avoids the bad things, does the good things, never be shaken. That's kind of cool sounding. Not to be shaken, not to be rattled. The promise of those is to those who live with God in his tent. The song 15, Psalm 15, is expressing the idea, never be shaken. And what does that mean? Well, it's talking first about a certain people, those who walk in integrity, work righteousness, speak the truth. And if we do that, then our lives are earthquake proof. Because if you've been around a little while, you know that earthquakes are a common occurrence in the life of all people, saints and non-believers. But these things make us earthquake proof in every situation. And I will share with you right now. Was it yesterday? At least yesterday, I had to draw on this. Mike, he says, you'll never be shaken. So it's 9 o'clock. My truck has a flat tire, a leaker, slow leaker, no biggie, right? Turn on the compressor, get out the hose, get on the attachment. Nothing. The compressor's working. Put my ear on the tire. Now, Bill would know how to do this. He's the car man, but I can't hear any air going in. Oh, no. It's getting late. Run down to AutoZone. They don't have... Anyway, it was a mess. Went down to AutoZone twice, right? Now it's 11 o'clock. Finally, my tire's filled. I'm going, you needed this time for your PowerPoint, Mike. And I said, are you a hypocrite and forget what you're going to teach everybody tomorrow? And so I'm just telling you that I've had to draw on this very psalm several times in the last 3 weeks. We will never be shaken. In every situation, we have victory and hope. It may not be easy. It may not be painless. But this is a promise from God never to be shaken. Nothing can separate us from the love of God, it tells us in Romans chapter 8. So that's Psalm 15, at least what I know about it. Hope you got something out of it. Blessing for me to teach it. For those of you that are Christian, just keep on keeping on. Integrity, righteousness, and truth. If you're not a Christian and you're thinking about it, think about it hard. It's the only way to have an earthquake-proof life, is to be a man, a woman, who has the characteristics God's looking for so that we can dwell with Him. So at this time, we'll offer the song of invitation. While we do that, please stand and sing. If you have a spiritual need, just let us know what it is. Thank you so much.